Okay, Boker Tov, we're back in person. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Bo, and Rav Soloveitchik has so many amazing, amazing pieces of Torah for this week's Parsha. He begins with a lengthy discussion on the words Bo El Paro. Hashem says to Moshe, Bo El Paro. And everybody asks the Kasha, why does it say Bo El Paro? Hashem should have told him Lech El Paro. Bo of salvation means come with me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, come with me. Lech would mean I'm sending you to go. You go on your own. But Bo, come to Paro means I'm going to take you with me. So we all know, Rav Soloveitchik writes, that when Hashem chose Moshe, Moshe was reluctant to accept the mission. He argued with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 7 days, the Medrash says. For 7 days he says, I'm not the guy. He considered himself unqualified. He was too modest, too humble. Right? Moshe said, Mi Anochi, who am I that I should go to Paro and take the Jewish people out? HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered him in Parsha Shemos, hey Herbie, good morning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered Parsha Shemos, Ki Eyei Mach. You know what my answer is? You know who you are? You're right. You're a nothing. But I'm going to be with you. I'm going to be with you. So I'm going to give you the confidence. I'm going to support you. Hashem promised Moshe that he would never desert him. He would participate in the implementation of the mission. And together, they would enter Paro's chambers. That's Bo El Paro, not Lech. I'm not saying you. Bo, come with me. I'm going to come with you. And Rav Soloveitchik develops that there's two kinds of shlichus. Not so important now to go into the two kinds, but he says the shlichus entrusted to a Navi belongs to the second category of personalistic shlichus. Man unites with Hashem, cleaves to Hashem, and loves Hashem with great passion. He feels the hot breath of eternity upon his cold face. He feels the Almighty. He experiences the great sweetness and exaltedness engendered by the touch of infinity. That is why Hashem says, Bo El Paro. It is not the formal shlichus wherein I just send you to go do a shlichus and I'm not there. That's one kind of shlichus. I ask you to do something with me. I need you to be Mekadesh Nisha. Shlichus works by Kiddushin. So I appoint you. You do the thing. I'm not there. It's not that you and I are the same person. But he says by a Navi, by a Jewish leader who goes on shlichus to serve the Jewish community and who's involved in spreading Hashem's word, it's not the pshat that he's a shliach and I just sent you and I'm not there, but Hashem sends the shliach and it's like HaKadosh Baruch who's there with the person. The person's identity merges with the Rabbonu Shalom. It is a personalistic shlichus where there is union between Hashem and the leader. My thoughts will become your thoughts. My speech will break through you. Therefore, Moshe, you are qualified because I am qualified. Bo El Paro, come with me. I will walk with you. I will be there when you enter the palace and I will not leave you on your own. You are the Shliach Tzibur. I am the Tzibur. I am united with you. We will walk together arm in arm, so to speak. Man can come so close to the Almighty that he and the Almighty are united. One voice, one feeling, one experience. Finitude somehow embraces the infinity and yet not disappearing. Anyway, so Soloveitchik says, and I was just thinking in terms of us, both in terms of a person when he walks through life feeling that he's on a mission. Every person has to feel like he's on a shlichus, like he's on a mission from the Rabbonu Shalom. That's what we're supposed to feel. Certainly Jewish leaders feel it, you know, maybe even more. But every person has to feel Bo El Paro. When Hashem instructs us something, don't think like a Kadosh Baruch Hu who's instructing you, Lech. Just go do it. Bo, he's coming with you. A Kadosh Baruch Hu is with you. He's giving you the tools. He's giving you the ability to do the mitzvos, to learn Torah, to be involved in your Yiddishkeit. We should feel a Kadosh Baruch Hu with us all the time. It's something that we work on with the boys in yeshiva all the time, to feel Hashem's presence in your life. All of this from Soloveitchik sees in the words, Bo El Paro. Doesn't say Lech, it says Bo. Oh. Now he says something unbelievable. This is unbelievable. This is the one that it was worth waking up for this morning. So, gentlemen, because I've never in my lifetime heard this, never seen this. This is incredible. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. I'm sure some of you are familiar with this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, but I'm also pretty sure that you may not have ever focused on these particular two words in this Mishnah. It's in Perek Hay, Mishnah Ches in Pirkei Avos, and it reads as follows. Reads like this. There were 10 things that were created, 10 miraculous items that were created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos of creation. Meaning the Friday of creation as the day progressed towards the end of the day. Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos, 10 things were created. So some of them you could probably guess. Pi Ha'aretz, the opening of the earth that swallowed Korach. Pi HaBe'er, the opening of the Be'er in the Midbar. Pi HaAson, the opening of the donkey, Bilam's donkey's mouth, the miraculous talking donkey, Mr. Ed. Right? Vahakeshes, and the rainbow. Vahamon, Vahamata, Vahashamir. Okay, so far we got it all.
What's a Shamir?
Shamir was that... that bug, I think it was the, chiseled the luchos, stone. That was able to chisel
a worm
that cut the stones for the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, I think so. Cut the stone. Now, but here's, Haksav v'hamichtav, the writing, Haksav v'hamichtav, I don't know, the writing, I don't know what the difference between Haksav and Michtav, v'haluchos, and the luchos mean. But asks Rav Soloveitchik, what does it mean the Ksav and the Michtav was written Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos? Now, the simple pshat in the Ksav HaMichtav, the simple pshat in the Ksav HaMichtav is the miraculous writing on the Luchos. That's what I assume it means, that you know we have a tradition that the Luchos were written miraculously, that the Ksav and the Michtav were one of the 10 miraculous things created by Hashmashos. Listen to Rav Soloveitchik's amazing, amazing homiletic explanation of what the Ksav and the Michtav is. Listen to this. He says this on the Pasuk in Parshas Bo, Leman tesaper ba'ozne bincha u'ben bincha. That why am I doing these miracles in Egypt? So that you should tell over to your children and your children's children about everything that happened in Egypt and everything that happened on Har Sinai, as we're going to see in a minute. And everything that happened miraculously in Jewish history, I'm making these miracles and I'm giving you this Torah and I'm giving you everything so that I want you to be able to pass it over to your children and your children's children. So this is what he says. The word Sipur, as in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, a lot of Rav Soloveitchik's ideas on Bo are very connected to his ideas on the Seder. We're not holding by Pesach yet, but there's a lot of obvious connection. So he says, the word Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is also related to the word Sofer, a scribe. The common etymological root of these words suggests that a story can be transmitted orally as well as through the written word. Chazal maintained that at the twilight of the sixth day, Bein Hashmashos of the sixth day of creation, the groundwork was established for some of the greatest biblical miracles. Included within that group of miracles, Hashem created Haksav v'hamichtav, the ability to write. That the seemingly prosaic writing skill appears in this list of otherwise supernatural items suggests that there is something extraordinary in the ability to record an idea or event and preserve it thousands of years into the future. That we have a Sefer Torah that has writing on it, there's something miraculous about that Sefer Torah. It was written, it was created, the writing of the Sefer Torah was created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos, like the Pi HaAson, the Pi HaBe'er, the Pi HaAretz. What's the miracle of writing? I mean, you take a pen, why is that a miracle? Why was that created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos? Listen to what he said. So beautiful. The written word allows us to delve into man's thoughts and identify with them. When we study Chumash, that's all of us. That's what we're studying. We are not merely learning of events that took place thousands of years ago. Through the skill of Ksav HaMichtav, we become contemporaries of the protagonist. This is an idea of salvagic stresses time and time again, especially in that famous, most famous piece where he says he's learning and he feels like an old man, and the door opens and in comes the Rambam into his classroom, and in comes the Rabbi Akiva and all these people. So he feels young again because all these older guys than him are coming into the classroom. As a child in Cheder, I studied the parasha of Lech Lecha, he writes about himself, towards the beginning of the school year, during the raw Polish autumn. As I trudged through the muddy streets to school, I imagined how Avram traveled to Canaan under similar circumstances. As a young boy, I lived with the drama of the Akedah, the tragedy of Sarah's death. My heart would pound in fear. My heart would pound in fear that perhaps Esav would return early from the hunt before Yitzchak completed his blessing and Yaakov would be caught red-handed. He says, today we have a generation gap. Children can find no meaning in their parents' experiences. They have difficulty identifying people and events that took place only 20 years earlier. Yet, the ability to transport us into the past to span generations is the sublime idea behind Ksav HaMichtav. Through Ksav HaMichtav, one can relive events of thousands of years ago. This miracle of Ksav HaMichtav is most evident on the Seder night. A key directive on the Seder, the Haggadah is, V'chol dor v'dor chayav adam liros es atzmo k'ilhu yatzim b'tzayim. How can we relive an event that happened 3,500 years ago? Through Torah Shebaal Peh, a tradition that unites us with previous generations and enables us to experience events simultaneously with them. Recounting Yetzias Mitzrayim is not merely telling a story. The imperative of Yigadeh Levincha, telling your children, has a deeper meaning. It means that the son should be the sefer upon which the father writes. The foremost task of a father is to be a sofer, to transform his son into a book upon which he writes indelibly, a book that will survive him and be imparted to succeeding generations. And listen to this last incredible line, beautiful line, which I'm sure everybody here knows anyway. This one was really striking to me. The appellation, the people of the book, does not signify a nation that reads books. It is a nation whose very being is the book. The mitzvah of Sibur Yitzchai means inscribing one's entire religious consciousness upon the next generation until that generation is ready to perform the same task of Sipur at the Seder table with their own children. So if Salvechik sees in these words, Haksav HaMichtav was a miracle that was created Erev Shabbos Pesach Moshav. What's the miracle of the Ksav HaMichtav? The miracle is the people of the book. The miracle is that the words of Torah are literally Ki Heim Chayenu Va'orech Yomeinu. We're not the people of the book. Our entire lifetimes is the book. The book defines us. It's our eternity. The book is what gives us eternity. It what gives us. That's why it's miraculous. The book is the secret of Jewish continuity all these years. I've told you over many times in this year, of Yaakov Emden writes in his introduction to one of his books that the greatest miracle of all time was not the splitting of the sea or the 10 plagues, but the greatest miracle of all time is the survival of the Jewish people. The fact that we're still here after all we've been through is the greatest miracle. And what's the secret to that survival? Haksav HaMichtav. That's the miracle of the survival. The Michtav is Kihein Chayin of Arach Yameinu. It's through the words of Torah transmitted from father to son, to, and the words of Emuna and Yerushamayim and relationship with God that's been transmitted through Torah of all generations. That's the miracle. That's why in Erev Shabbos Pein Hashmashos, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that one of the miraculous things that was created Erev Shabbos Pein Hashmashos was Haksav VaHamichtav, the writing. Unbelievable. These are the 10 things that were the miraculous things that were created Erev Shabbos Pein Hashmashos. Haksav VaHamichtav. Oh.
Amazing. So when a person studies Torah, that's what this spoke, why this spoke to me so much, is that a person has to feel that when he studies Torah, he's literally interacting with eternity and creating eternity for the future, because he's filling himself up, and he's filling himself up for what he's going to be able to fill his children up with. Let's continue. Vayomru Avde Paro Elav. What does the pasuk say? Vayomru Avde Paro Elav. Paro's servants said to him, "How are you letting Moshe and Aaron push you around?" Vayomru Avde Paro Elav. How are you letting Moshe and Aaron push you around? So Soloveitchik has this beautiful, beautiful idea, which is probably much more relevant to the Seder, but I think it's very relevant to us as well. There's a difference between, this is unbelievable. Rav Soloveitchik made an entire drush, I forget about one word, one letter. So, Paro's servants are called Avdei Paro. In the Haggadah we say, Avadim Hayinu Lit Paro. Paro's servants are Avdei Paro. We are Avadim Lit Paro. What's the difference? Says of Soloveitchik so beautifully, the term Avdei Paro suggests that these people were slaves of Paro. Their very identity was based on their allegiance to Paro. In contrast, Klal Yisrael's servitude, slavery to Paro, is described as Avadim Hayinu LeParo. Although we were in servitude to Paro, we never identified with Paro, our taskmaster. The Medrash in Shmos Rabbah indicates. Oh, he spoke about this last Shabbos. A few weeks ago. We mentioned this in the Shir. Indicates that every Shabbos, the enslaved Klal Yisrael would read from scrolls. Right? We spoke about this. So I bet you thought there were scrolls of Sefer Bereishis, which foretold that they would be redeemed. Even during their servitude, they believed in their ultimate redemption. So Klal Yisrael has always had this bracha that wherever we happen to be, even if we're in Egypt or we're in Nazi Germany or wherever we are, we know we're not fully owned by the people who think they own us. We know that we have our freedom, we have our rights, we have our spiritual independence. And that's the difference between Avdei Paro and Avadim LeParo. Paro's servants had none of their own identity. They just belonged to the state. They belonged to Paro. That's a usual slave mentality. But Klal Yisrael realized that we, even at the time of the worst servitude, we're not fully bought into him. We're not fully taken over. We're Avadim LeParo. And in America, we have to remember that despite the fact that we are members of the United States government and we have allegiance to the government and there are certain things that we take part of, we pay taxes, we support the police and the fire department and the government and all those things, we take part in it. But at the end of the day, this is not our home. This is not what we are. We have our own set of morals and values and guideposts in Torah, and we are never fully members of where we are. There's always something that separates us, that we're a little different because we have a different moral compass. And this is a little bit alluded to in Avdei Paro versus Avadim LeParo. And in that similar vein, wow, he says such a beautiful, again, just an amazing, every piece of Torah here in this parasha is just like beyond amazing. And very related, Mamash, what we're talking about, in Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud, so they brought Moshe and Aaron back to Paro, and he says, "Okay, I'll let you go, but who's going? Mi va mi ahochem?" Moshe says famously, "Bin Arenu v'zekeinenu neleich, b'vaneinu v'vnoseinu v'senekeinu, ki chag Hashem lanu." And Paro responds with a funny line. "Vayom aleihem, yihi chen Hashem imachem, kasher Hashem, let Hashem be with you, kasher ashalach eschem ve'estapchem. Just as I will let you and your young children out." Now, it says, Re'u ki ra'a neged pneichem. See that evil is opposite your face. Re'u ki ra'a neged pneichem. So Rashi says, first he says, kitargumo, unklus. I don't know what unklus says here. Chazu are bisha da'atun svirin lemebad l'kabal apechem l'istachara. Not sure what he means. Umedrash agada shamati. So Rashi quotes a medrash. Kochav echad yesh sheshmo ra'a. There's a star that's name is ra'a. Amalem paro ra'ani bat stagnin shili I see in my astrology. Oso kochav ola l'krasim mivu simen dam v'ariga. You're gonna have blood. You're gonna have bad tidings in the future. Ukeshechatu yisrael be'egel l'bikash kach brachol l'hargam amar moshe b'tfilaso. Lama yomer mitzayim lema bira'a hotziyam. Zui shamar lam re'u ki ra'a neged p'neichem. Miyad vayinachem Hashem ala ra'a. And he changed the blood to damila shemol Yeshua. A whole story. Listen to Rav Soloveitchik's idea about this. He says ra'a means Paro very well understood that the Jewish people are different and they're going to be leading the lives of being different. And Paro's telling them, you should know that by being different, this is going to cause ra'ah for you. And that's the life of being a Jew. The life of being different means that you're going to open yourself up to anti-Semitism. That's part of being different. Anyone who's different does, it's almost natural. Again, I'm not making excuses for anti-Semitism. Don't read me wrong. But the facts are, when a person looks different, so they bring comments upon themselves. When a person dresses differently, when a person has a different set of morals and values, that causes people to look askance at people who are different. He says, Paro understood the implications of the word Ivrim. Right? Ivrim means the entire world on one side, the Jews on the other side. Avram and Ivri. The Jews wanted to be singular, unique. Moshe and Aaron wanted to establish a solitary society, a spiritually different community. Paro began to warn Moshe against the consequences of such a venture. Paro, in essence, was telling Moshe, Re'u, look at what you're planning to create, a society that's going to be hated. The Jew cannot eat, cannot drink with the Gentile. He cannot enter his church. If the Gentile touches his wine, the Jew cannot drink it. The separation from society that Moshe is proposing will promote hatred. You are creating a community of martyrdom. The tragic consequences of what you are attempting to create is foretold by the star. Earlier, Paro asked Moshe, who and who are going? Mi v'mi alochem, if you want to start such a community, why risk the lives of your children? The same argument would apply if an astronaut about to embark on a space voyage wanted to take his child along. If you personally want to take the risk, that's up to you. But I will not allow you to risk your children's lives. Fascinating. Again, I don't know if this is the place to get into a whole discussion of what the roots of anti-Semitism are. And somebody actually just spoke at the Young Israel Woodman, I think, on this very topic last week. You know, should the Jews remain silent? How are we supposed to react to anti-Semitism? I'm assuming he said, no, we're not supposed to remain silent. We're not supposed to... I'm assuming that was the answer. That was the drasha. It wasn't at the drasha. But we certainly live in a time where we're seeing it again. I mean, everyone's saying it's like a new thing. I remember when I was growing up, it wasn't such a new thing. When we used to play ball on the streets of Teaneck back in the early days. Now Teaneck is already, you know, when I was, my family was the 130th Orthodox family in Teaneck. I think now they're about 3,000. But we were the 130th family in 1970. It was a small little congregation. There was one shul in Tina when we moved in 1970. Now they're about 15, 20. But we used to play ball in the streets. People used to drive by and yell at us and throw rocks at us and scream. People used to do that. I'm not sure. Again, I mean, people weren't walking in and shooting our plate. I mean, that's crazy. That's nuts.
Happened here.
What?
It happened here in Lawrence. I'm from since 1970 also.
Yeah, same thing used to happen. Yeah, people used to happen.
Chased.
Yeah. So, right, I think Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks says that anti-Semitism is not a new hate, it's the oldest hatred. It's not a It's the oldest hatred. But again, Rav Soloveitchik is saying over here, it took, I mean, Paro is pointing out to the Jewish people, again, he's saying it homiletically. Ru'u ki ra negev nechem. You want to have your own religion, you want to have your own thing? That takes with it a certain amount of sacrifice. I mean, we're going to speak about that to a degree. When you're different, you can't be buddy buddies with everybody. You're going to be different, and being different is going to require a certain amount of taking a certain amount of abuse. And this actually is very connected to some other things that he talks about in the parsha. See, while I'm on the parsha. Oh, right. Right, the whole idea of the Karban Pesach, which is in the parsha. Let me just quickly jump to that for a second. The whole idea that it's actually on the top of the back of the sheet, because it's connected to this. Because part of the Mesiris Nefesh of being a Jew, part of it is having to suffer with anti-Semitism, that Esav hates Yaakov. But Rav Soloveitchik develops this idea very much on the Pasuk, V'ra'isi es ha'dam ufasachti aleichem. Now I'm going to see the blood. You're going to take the blood of the Egyptian god. Hello? The Egyptians worshipped the animal, the goat. The Egyptians worshipped that animal. And, right? The Klal Yisrael wonders, how can we take the blood of their god and put it on our door and they're not going to kill us? The Medrash in Shmos Rabbah says on the Pasuk, V'avar olayich v'orech misposesis b'damayich. V'omar lach b'damayich chayi. V'omar lach b'damayich chayi. With that blood, I saw you, I passed you by. Pasuk in Yecheskel, which we quoted the Seder, of course, right? V'avar olayich v'orech misposesis b'damayich. V'omar lach b'damayich chayi. With your blood, you will live. V'omar lach b'damayich chayi. This is the blood of the Karban Pesach and the blood of the Bris Milah. The slave hates physical pain. He suffers enough from the baton of the taskmaster and is not prepared to endure pain because of a commandment which will not increase his portion of meat from the flesh pot. The slave is a coward. He quakes before his owner and his brutal taskmaster. After all, a slave does not understand the idea of self-sacrifice, of fighting for a principle or an ideal. Therefore, the Chachamim said that a slave does not make a worthy witness. Cowardly as he is, he will often not tell the truth. Moshe came and told the people, undergo physical pain. Circumcise yourselves. Right? Kol ben nechar. Kol orei lo yochabo. If you don't have a bris, you can't eat from the Karban Pesach. Why was it so important to have a bris to cause a little pain, a lot of pain to your body when Klal Yisrael was becoming a people? It's because HaKadosh Baruch was trying to tell Klal Yisrael that being a Jew involves sacrifice. It involves Mesiris Nefesh. And offer that lamb, which is deified by the Egyptians. You have to take the Egyptian god and slaughter it. When the Egyptians notice, they will certainly blame the Jews for profaning their religion. Hey, nizbach es toavas mitzrayim leinem velo yiskelunu. Right? That pasuk, not Toavas Mitzrayim, whatever that pasuk is, Perek Ches, pasuk Chav Beis, that was back in Pasha's Va'era. Right? So, Paro says, what do you have to go to the desert? Go bring sacrifices here. Moshe says, sorry, it's a problem. We can't bring our sacrifice here because our sacrifices are your gods. Could we bring Hei Nizbach? I was right. It's Toavas Mitzrayim. Very strange. Toavas, the deity. Toiv usually means something that's disgusting. But Hei Nizbach is Toavas Mitzrayim v'lo yiskelunu. Nevertheless, the slaves took upon themselves both the suffering and the commandment of the Karban Pesach with love and were not frightened. They were ready to pay with the blood of suffering and fear for the privilege of performing Hashem's command. And thus the response, Va'omar lach, b'damayich chayi, b'damayich chayi, with the blood of the Karban Pesach, the sacrifice, and the blood of the Bris Milah, the blood of these two sacrifices, taking the Egyptian god and sacrificing it and hurting and injuring yourself with a bris milah, that's the blood of your life. Because being a Jew, and that's why this is at the very creation of Jewish people, being a Jew involves blood, it involves sacrifice. I always say this pshat, and Rav Soloveitchik alludes to this pshat also, right after Matan Torah, maybe he'll speak about it again, I don't know, in Parshas Mishpatim, there's this very strange episode that happens after Matan Torah where Moshe takes blood and he throws it on the people. And he says, Zed Dam HaBris, why is he throwing blood on them? So I always understood the pshat there to mean that he's telling them, very nice, you stood by Har Sinai and you heard all these words and you said, Nasa Venishma, beautiful. Talk is cheap. I'm throwing blood on you to know it's not just going to be talk. Talk is cheap, but there's going to be blood involved in this covenant. B'damayich chayi. Gevura, courage or heroism, is a foundation of Judaism. Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of the divine name, manifests itself in courage. This courage was sown by Jews on the night of Pesach. Moshe said, Ulekachtem agudas ezov, utvaltem oso badom, vihizatem al shtei hamezuzos v'al hamashkof, from the blood, and don't leave your house till the morning. V'avarti beretz Mitzrayim b'alayla hazeh, and when Hashem sees the blood on the doorpost, he'll pass over the entrance, and he will not v'lo yitein lamashkes lingofes Mitzrayim to enter your houses. Hashem wants to see your sacrifice. Right? It's not that Hashem wanted to see the blood on the. It's not just that he wanted to see the blood on the doorpost. He wanted to see your willingness to sacrifice for Him. Your transformation, your wondrous courage, your willingness to conquer your fear and suffering. You have learned to distinguish between Kodesh and Chol. You have displayed Gevura in conquering your fear and your will. Therefore, Hashem will distinguish between you and the Egyptians and will reveal His trait of Gevura or restraint. So, we can't get away from it, gentlemen. Part of being a Jew involves sacrifice, it involves courage, it involves the willingness to be different. The willingness to be different. All of this was put into the Jewish people as a nation from their very, very formation. And we have a couple of final ideas to share with you as well. A couple of more final ideas. The next idea of Soloveitchik sees in the following pasuk. Od nega echad avi al paro. Perek yud aleph. Pasuk aleph. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Od nega echad avi al paro. There's going to be one more mak. Classic example of a pasuk that we've read many, many times. Rav Soloveitchik saw something in it that certainly I've never seen. Oh, nega echad. There's going to be one more. Like, Moshe, are you keeping count? How many have we had so far? We have 9. Well, there's going to be one more. Says Rav Soloveitchik, by the fact that Hashem is telling Moshe to be one more, shows that He never told him in the beginning how many there were going to be. That's why he's got to tell him. There's going to be one more. Because Moshe had no idea. I mean, it could have been 20 more. There could have been 0 more. He had no idea. So listen to Rav Soloveitchik's take on this. Not until after the 9th plague did Hashem reveal to Moshe that there would be a total of 10. Hashem also did not reveal when Yetzias Mitzrayim would take place until this point. Similarly, throughout their 40 years in the Midbar, Klai Yisrael did not know how often or where they would be moved. This uncertainty required Klai Yisrael to develop faith in HaKadosh Baruch. We don't know the future. Wouldn't it be great if we all would know what would be tomorrow, what would be in a week, what would be in a month, what's going to be with Klai Yisrael? Or Salvechik says that's part of the human condition, and that's part of the requirement that a person has to have faith, to have emuna, to have that leap of faith, especially when things seem to be going in the wrong direction. A person is obligated to have emuna. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't always reveal, he doesn't always say what's going to happen. Od nega echad. I'm now telling you there's going to be one more. But until now, after the first mach and the second, they keep going through it. They have no idea. How many is it going to be? When's it going to end? What's the plan? We don't know the plan. We just are supposed to continue going in our way. Like in the Daf Yomi a couple of weeks ago, there's a dispute between Chizkiyo HaMelech and Yeshayo and Yirmiyo HaNavi Chizkiyo HaMelech, who saw he was going to have wicked kids, so he decided not to have children, and Yirmiyo went crazy at him and said, "You don't know the future." So, what was it, Yeshayo or Navi? I'm losing it now. I thought it was Yirmiyo. So he said, it was either Yeshayo or Yirmiyo, I forgot already. So he said, "Okay, let me marry your daughter." He said to Yirmiyo or Navi. Or Yeshayo, and I got to look it up. Okay, we'll put him in the chat later. Yeshayo, okay. It was Chizkiyo and Yeshayo. I've got to look it up in the Gemara Brachos. Anyway, it was just 2 weeks ago, Daf Yomi. You see how well I remember the Daf Yomi. But the Navi said to Chizkiyo, "Bahad kavshi derachmana lamalach. Why are you trying to figure out the hidden secrets of the? Your job is to have kids. Your job is to do the mitzvahs. You don't say, 'Oh, I'm worried what's going to happen in the future.' You got to have kids and try to do your best and try to pass it on." But that's the emuna that we all have to live with, and this is a little bit of a chizuk for us. We don't know the future. And we'll close with one final idea here, which Rav Salvechik actually stresses time and time and time and time again, and even time and time again in this parsha. It begins like this. And this is skipping so many other great ideas, but anyway. Kachatzos halayla. What does Hashem say? Vayomer Moshe, ko amar Hashem, kachatzos halayla. And the Medrash famously says that Hashem said, bachatzos halayla, but Moshe says, kachatzos. Although Moshe himself used the phrase, kachatzos halayla, Hashem said, bachatzos. It's going to happen exactly at midnight. Chazal say that Makos Bechoros was not a half second before midnight, nor a half second after midnight. Not even an infinitesimal time before or after. It was midnight precisely. Just as Hashem was precise in saying Bachatzos, so a Jew needs to be precise. How could, even though it's funny, Moshe Rabbeinu said kachatzos because a human being can't know the precise second of midnight. That's what Chazal said. Just as Hashem was precise, so too a Jew must be precise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to respond to the demand for precision. To be a good Jew, one has to be a disciplined Jew. And to be a disciplined Jew, one has to develop disciplined time awareness. A Jew should have a built-in timepiece. Judaism walks around with a clock or a stopwatch on its wrist. This is one of the great features of Judaism. It is very precise. It consists of measurements and mathematical calculations. To miss one calculation, one tiny, infinitesimal fraction of time is identical with treachery, with deceit. The mitzvah of the Karban Pesach is also based upon time awareness. The difference between chatzos and after chatzos. If the Karban Pesach was shechted 1 minute before chatzos on Erev Pesach, it cannot be used. After chatzos, it's kosher. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if you eat the kezias of matzah or maror before chatzos, you're yotzei the mitzvah. If you eat it after Chatzos, there is no fulfillment of the mitzvah at all. Certain karbanos must be eaten in the time frame of a day and a night. If you do so, you've discharged your obligation. But after a day and a night period has passed, it cannot be eaten. You get karis for eating it. We cannot say that if it is impossible to celebrate the Seder on the night of Pesach, we'll do it on the other night, on the night before. I can't make it that night. Hashem will understand. Instead of doing the Seder the Pesach night, I can't make it. I got a business meeting. I'll do the Seder in my house the next night. We cannot do that. We are very time conscious. And each minute, each infinitesimal element of time plays an important role. People sometimes ask, after all, the whole difference is 2 minutes. Why should a Jew be careful about 2 minutes? But we are. And this is a fundamental component of what it means to be a Jew, to be time conscious. This is a basic idea, and perhaps the most central idea of our Weltanschauung. We have a unique sensitivity for time that no one else has, for the exactitude of time, and for the passing of time, and a readiness to live in accordance with the obligations of time. I'm always struck by the pasuk that we say every Shabbos morning, the following pasuk: Limnos yameinu kein hoda v'navi levav chachma. To count our days, and it's not just to count our days brings wisdom. To count our days, to count our minutes, to count our seconds. Limnos yameinu kein hoda. That's wisdom. V'navi levav chachma will bring a person. When you count every moment, you count every day as an opportunity for growth. Every moment is pregnant with an opportunity to do a mitzvah, to give yourself eternity. Limnos yameinu kein hoda v'navi levav chachma. That will bring you to a heart of wisdom. There's something about counting every day that's connected to the wisdom of being a Jew. And then Rav Salvechik just develops the idea that a slave, that's why the first mitzvah has to do with time. Achodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim, sanctifying time. The first commandment, he talks about how a slave has no time awareness. He doesn't care about time. He just, one day rolls into the next day. He has nothing to look forward to, nothing to think about in the past. He talks about how Judaism, this time awareness or experience, has three components. Retrospection, Jews look back at the past. Anticipation, Jews look ahead to the future. And the third is appreciation or evaluation of the present moment as one's most precious possession. No one is worthy of time awareness if he can't think about the past. Memory is not just the storehouse for latent impressions. There's also living memory, which reproduces and re-experiences the past. That's the whole Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rabbi Akiva, like we said before, is not just a figure who lived so many hundreds of years ago. Back to what he said about Aksav HaMichtav. He is a part of my life, and his image and teachings are integrated into my personality. When I think of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, the Rambam, I am not thinking about people who lived in antiquity. Their images have become part and parcel of me. On the other hand, you also have to think about the future. Time awareness also contains a moral element, responsibility for emerging events. Man should try to mold and fashion the future. This is exactly why he has been created as a free agent. Man is free to reach central and basic decisions that will determine his and sometimes the world's future. Finally, to connect retrospection with anticipation, memory with expectation, hindsight with foresight, one must cherish the present, fleeting moment as if it represents eternity. Judaism has a very sensitive approach to the present. Every minute is valuable, each second precious. With a fraction of a second, one may realize or destroy hopes, visions, and expectations. Right? Decisions made in a split second. The halacha is therefore extremely time conscious, finding the present moment so important. For instance, we are permitted to do work on a Friday afternoon until 1 minute before sunset, but we are forbidden from doing work 1 minute later. A person reads Kriya Shema at 9:05 and he gets a mitzvah. At 9:06, it's worthless. What did he miss? It was the same words, the same kavana, the same intention, the same dedication. And yet, he has not fulfilled the mitzvah. Time is of critical importance. Not years or months, but seconds and split seconds. This time awareness and appreciation is the singular gift granted to free man, because time belongs to him. It is his time, and he can utilize it to the utmost or waste it. And this was the incredible thing that slaves who had no appreciation of time, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, that's the first mitzvah of becoming a Jew, appreciating time, realizing that your time is yours. Your time is yours to spend it and not to waste it. Time has to be sanctified. And hopefully as we embark upon Shabbos, we can use this special island in time to think about all those things that are important and to use our time wisely as well. So let me wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll see you again next week.